How about it? Off and rolling Tuesday, August 27, 2024 is the date. Welcome in to the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman Gabe Kuhn on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside producer for the next couple of days. That's Sheila Sadeghi. I have a Twitter account for her as well that we can find. Sheila Sadeghi 1 on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it. Sheila, how's it hanging? How
it's
are we
hanging
doing?
Out here.
Okay, nice. Glad to hear. Glad to hear.
Of course.
Okay. Well, if you need to make sure it's her account, I think we have the Jimmy Butler emo era profile picture.
Oh, it's the best one.
Oh, yeah. And he's got like the fake little eye rings or eyebrow rings.
I wish he's had
that. I don't know if I wish. I don't know if I wish.
He needs to bring it back.
Okay, understood. But Sheila will be with me for the next couple of days. And we have 2 hours to talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We'll have plenty to get to. I'll talk about the CeeDee Lamb deal that got signed yesterday. 4 years, $136 million. And what does that mean for Dak Prescott? We know that they have a couple of guys that are waiting for contracts, Dak Prescott and Micah Parsons. But Dak expires after this year. Could he hit free agency? Will he not? I will discuss it with you, and I will give I'll make a plea to the Dallas Cowboys about Dak Prescott around 5:30. But also, we have some Titans news, Grizzlies news, whole nine yards. As far as guests are concerned, 4:30, Christian Fowler from Bluff City Media and the On the Bluff podcast with me. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, full-length video version on YouTube. And then Jeff Calkins at 5 o'clock from the Jeff Calkins Show and the Daily Memphian. He joins every single Tuesday and Thursday. And with Jeff, I think I'm going to have to bring up what we saw today that has to do with the induction ceremony for the Memphis Sports Hall of Fame. He is one of the 18 committee members that votes on these things. So I'm going to have to ask how all the voting went down and everything else. But for those that have not seen this, induction ceremony set for October 16th at the Renaissance Convention Center. Attendees have the option to purchase individual tickets for $75. You can reserve a table for 10 people for $750. But we're going to see Zach Randolph go in, Grizzlies legend. How about that? We like to see that. Reggie White will be in there as well. He'll be headlining it. Obviously, the 1 year with the Memphis Showboats. But he is in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. There's some connection here. And it makes a whole lot of sense. And he's one of a few members that are going to get in posthumously. How about Andre Turner, Memphis basketball hero, gets in? That's an interesting one to me because it feels like it took a while. But when you break through sort of the way these things are voted upon, and I heard Jeff talking about it this morning, you can't just go strictly Grizzlies and Tiger basketball, vote everybody in at once. And there were some people that definitely had to get in ahead of him, right? I mean, you had Keith Lee, Penny, guys like that. And finally he gets in, though. And it's nice to see, and he'll be coaching alongside Penny Hardaway this year. So Andre Turner gets in. Here's my favorite one because I have him on the show all the time. And it's a guy who's just like, when we talk about retirement, I hope I can do retirement half as good as Jarvis Greer, 43 years at WMC. And like right now, like Grizz beat with Grind City Media. The guy traveled over to Paris for the Olympics. I can't imagine. Like, there's people that do retirement right, and there's people that do retirement wrong. I think he is, like, the top of people, top of the list of people close to me that I know that is doing retirement right. I can't imagine anybody else seemingly enjoying retirement as much as him. And still part of the scene, part of the Memphis sports scene with the Grizz beat, still doing Memphis football as the analyst alongside Wolo. Now, I think he was one of the MCs previously. He has been one of the MCs alongside Wolo and Jeff for the Memphis Sports Hall of Fame induction, but I would imagine he's probably going to have to back out of that responsibility. I think that's probably what we're looking at. Also, you're going to have college swim coach Dick Fadgen. He actually coached Gabrielle Rose, who we know is an absolute legend in this city. United States Racquetball Association Hall of Famer Andy Roberts. I'm not a big racquetball person, but when you go look up Andy Roberts, somebody who has definitely made his mark in the racquetball community. I don't know where you can play racquetball. I think the JCC has a little bit, maybe your local YMCA. But pickleball seems to have taken over for it, but Andy Roberts gets in. Bobby Bingo Smith, Melrose legend, gets in. And that's an interesting situation because he was a guy who did not get recruited by Memphis. Ended up going to Tulsa, played with the Cavs for some time, legend there. But, you know, it was always a really tough situation. I think the black community in Memphis was very torn up and annoyed with the situation that Bobby Smith was not able to play for the University of Memphis. But he made his way regardless. Former Memphis basketball women's star, Regina Street. I think she still owns records for points and rebounds. She got in. And then we have a couple of prep coaches, basketball coach Robert Newman and longtime ECS football coach Jim Hines. But the induction ceremony, again, will be October 16th at the Renaissance Convention Center. And we're going to talk with Jeff Calkins around 5 o'clock about this whole thing, how the voting goes, how the emceeing goes. But Jeff will join again at 5 o'clock. Now, we do have some Grizzlies news. I know that there's a lot of people that have been annoyed by the fact that the Grizzlies are going to be holding training camp this season in Nashville due to ongoing construction and upgrades at FedEx Forum. Like, there's some people that are very frustrated by that. But we did get some shouts about their fall schedule. Fall calendar will include a Grizzlies day with the Memphis Redbirds. That'll be September 21st. Grizzlies night at Overton Park Shell, October 4th. So you can look forward to that. And I think this is the biggest thing because this is the one time we're really going to get to see them in FedEx Forum before the season starts, before we get to preseason. And their first home preseason game will be October 10th against the Hornets at 8 p.m. But they will have an open practice Sunday, October 6th. 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Your first opportunity to get into FedEx Forum, see Zach Edey alongside Ja Morant, see how that pick and roll looks. I'm glad they're making it into town, though, because there was that thought process that we'd never really get to see them before that October 10th game against the Charlotte Hornets. But right after that, they're going straight from October 6th. October 7th, they're going to be playing against the Mavs in their preseason opener. So that's going to be a quick turnaround for them, but I'm glad they're getting in front of the home crowd. Now, they do have a little bit of roster move news that we need to discuss. Nothing big. Nothing I'm going to sit here and lose sleep over. In fact, I honestly like the move. But there was some question after trading Zaire Williams, getting Mamadi Diakite here to Memphis. What were they going to do with him? There was some thought that they could keep him on the roster. But as of today, they've released Mamadi Diakite, who's a big out of Virginia a couple of years ago. I think he played 6 games with the Nets last year, did not play a whole bunch, has not been a very productive pro by any stretch of the imagination. But they're going to waive and stretch him. And what does that mean? That means that they are going to lessen the cap hit for him over 2 or 3 years. They're going to stretch that cap hit out over some years to try to lessen the money that they have going to the cap. And it makes a whole lot of sense. And now they're going to have a 15th active roster spot to do whatever with. I don't know if there's going to be a two-way guy that they convert. I don't know if they're going to go find somebody out there on the open market that they feel comfortable with going into the season. Maybe another big that they feel comfortable with. But I think it makes sense. Mamadi Diakite was not going to play any role for this Grizzlies team. And now they have an active roster spot to mess around with. And I think they did a good job because I think the deadline was approaching for the wave and stretch situation. So they had to get it done immediately, like very, very soon. But I think they did a good job trying to lessen that cap hit for Mamadi Diakite, who I think was owed $6 million, somewhere around that. Not overly massive in the grand scheme of things, but with the new CBA, any money that you can save against the cap that keeps you out of the luxury tax and the luxury tax aprons is very, very important. But we will keep an eye, and if we have any news on that 15th active roster spot, which hopefully, I know last year it mattered a whole lot because everybody was hurt, and we know how big that injury report was. Hopefully that 15th roster spot, this is my hope, hopefully it doesn't matter as much as it did a year ago in that 27-55 season from hell. Now, I want to get a little bit of NFL in here because this is pretty massive in my opinion. It's going to go under the radar to a lot of NFL fans because it's just sort of a regular name, casual name that a lot of people don't know about. But the Titans, who have been very, very aggressive this offseason, going to try to acquire guys for on the defensive side of the ball to strengthen that, to see if they can, you know, surround Will Levis with enough to go win ball games. They've already added Kenneth Murray, who was a linebacker for the Chargers for some years, Tavondre Sweat, who they got out of the college ranks for the 2024 NFL Draft. He's from Texas, big defense tackle. Really excited to see what he can do. Sebastian Joseph Day, D-tackle, played for the Chargers and the Rams previously. Lajarius Sneed, they traded for, all-pro caliber cornerback from the Chiefs. Jadobia Awuzie, who is a veteran defensive back. And then Quandre Diggs, who's a safety, who was with the Seahawks recently. Today, they made a trade that I like. I think it makes a whole lot of sense. There were some questions about this guy by the name of Ernest Jones, linebacker for the Rams. He's a captain for them. He was their signal caller, quarterback of the defense. And there were some questions this week about if they were going to pay him, if they were going to extend him, and what that was going to look like. Well, the Rams ended up trading their linebacker, Ernest Jones, their captain, and a 2026 sixth-round pick to the Titans in exchange for a 2026 fifth-round pick. If you look at Ernest Jones and what he does best, he is one of the best pass-rushing interior inside linebackers in the entire NFL. I mean, he is a great blitzer, had 4.5 sacks a year ago, 145 tackles, very good sideline to sideline. But when you look at this Titans team, it's kind of strange the situation they're in. You don't really know where they're at. They don't necessarily know where they're at either. After the Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill, get to the top of the AFC seasons they had, there was going to be some type of gap year, some type of rebuild. But based on all of the acquisitions they've made, it feels like they're trying to at least compete. It feels like they're trying to do something in the AFC South. They have 7 new starters now, including Ernest Jones, that will be gracing that defense. 7 new starters. There is 11 players on the defensive side of the ball that start that will have 7 new faces trying to go make something happen for them. And when it comes to my opinion on them this particular season, it's all going to hinge on what you see out of Will Levis. Is Will Levis a guy that you can trust going into the future? I thought we saw some good things from him last year. His first game, threw for about 250 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. We've seen him be able to pace an offense, have decent command, and show a little bit. But there also were other games where he trusted his arm a little bit too much, put the ball in harm's way, made that offense a little bit uncomfortable. But all of my opinions about the Titans going into the future hinge on that guy wearing number 7 who has the Mayo cologne. He has the Mayo $8 cologne that we talked about last week. What will he look like? He's strong, got decent legs. As far as getting out of the pocket, making some things happen, I think his pocket presence is okay. It could be improved, decent footwork. But what is it going to look like? DeAndre Hopkins has dealt with some injuries. You have Calvin Ridley coming in. That should be a big help for him. But what does it look like? This team right now, I think in most of the prognosticators' opinions, this roster is probably bottom five in the National Football League. I have said for a while that I don't think it's quite that low. I could make a case for bottom half, maybe bottom third of the National Football League. But this team also, if Will Levis is what they think he can be, and I haven't heard the greatest reports this offseason based on training camp and everything else, if he's what they think he can be when they drafted him out of Kentucky, this team could get back on their feet going into next season. I think this team could be a sneaky 7 or 8 win team. I'm not betting on it. I'm not going to bet any overs on the Tennessee Titans this year. But they have made some really solid moves to go get some solid players that they feel like can be part of their future. And when you're in a situation where you're rebuilding, when you have a quarterback that you want to kick the tires on and see if it works out, that's what you have to do. You can't get yourself into a situation like Justin Fields was in with the Chicago Bears the last 4 years, where you have this young quarterback, doesn't have a very good defense, doesn't have offensive weapons until the very end. He had just had one there in DJ Moore. You can't do that because that quarterback's going to lose confidence in the people around him. He's going to be uncomfortable with his situation because there's just not enough out there to go win ball games. I think what the Titans have done this offseason is a positive for Will Levis, is a positive for what this team could be going into the future. They've gotten some pieces. They've filled some holes. They've done exactly what they're supposed to do. Rand Carthon, I have been impressed with them. They have a new coach. We understand all of that, and Brian Callahan. But they have gotten enough pieces to see, to get a good look at Will Levis as a franchise starting quarterback. Now, we know what that looks like. Is it a pass or is it a fail? This year will tell us all we need to know about the future of the quarterback position and the future of the Tennessee Titans, but it's going to hinge on Will Levis and what he is able to do. Now, also in the NFL, we have a couple of other things I do want to mention. The Chiefs have made some moves. Juju Smith-Schuster, they signed him back. I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine what he's going to look like. Caught for 200 yards last year for the Pats. But we do know 2 years ago he was the hero of the Chiefs Super Bowl run, and he got held, I believe. Yeah, it was him that got held. It was sort of a stop-and-go route that led the Chiefs to go beat the Eagles with a field goal. So you'll remember that. And he caught for 900 yards that year. So, I mean, getting Juju Smith-Schuster back in the building with Patrick Mahomes could be good. They also signed their center, all-pro center, Creed Humphrey, to an agreement, 4 years, $72 million. That's a hell of an extension, $50 million guaranteed. You know why I take pride in that? There's a reason I take pride in that. I used to play center at the University of Memphis. And if you look at that contract, 4 years, $72 million for a center, for an interior offensive lineman, they usually don't get money like that. And if you're wondering, yes, that is the highest paid center in NFL history now. Creed Humphrey gets to take that money home and laugh to the bank. So shout out to him. There's a couple of guys that are going to start the year on the physically unable to perform list. I do want to mention that. Nick Chubb, who I thought tore about everything in his knee last year. Just everything in his knee. I think it was Minkah Fitzpatrick went low on him in the Browns versus Steelers game, and it bent back. Apparently it was just ACL, MCL, that type of thing. But he will miss the first four games. So Jerome Ford, if you're looking at your fantasy teams, I know we're going to start up the 92.9 Fantasy League, and I'm the reigning champ, by the way. I don't know if you knew that, Sheila. I just have to brag on myself really quick. I know no one cares, so I'll move on quickly. But if you're looking at your fantasy team, Jerome Ford, for those first four games of the year, that's going to be their lead back to start the season. Also in Titans news, before I go ahead and get to Christian Fowler here in just a moment, Malik Willis is no longer a Titan. I don't know if people got to see this yesterday, but he is he's off to Green Bay. The Packers traded for Malik Willis, and the Titans got back a 2025 seventh-round pick. And with this, kind of interesting to me because they have two guys. They've drafted him back-to-back years, one in the fifth round in Sean Clifford, one in the seventh round, Michael Pratt, who we're familiar with from Tulane. He had a really good career at Tulane that, they ultimately won a New Year's Six Bowl with him against USC when he was at Tulane. But they were not convinced that Sean Clifford or Michael Pratt were backups. We're going to be good enough to back up Jordan Love, who is the new $55 million per year man. So they went and got Malik Willis, and Matt LaFleur mentioned after their last preseason game, Matt LaFleur, of course, the coach of the Packers, head coach of the Packers, mentioned after their last preseason game that their backup may not be on the roster already. So it looks like Malik Willis is slated to be their backup, but I think there's some risk in doing that because he has not been a part of that offense the entire preseason. He's been with the Titans. You're going to have to get him used to things very quickly. If Jordan Love goes down, who are you going to turn to? We're going to have to see how that all plays out. Now, you've heard us talk a lot about FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Well, we have something a little bit different for you. Now through September 22nd, all FanDuel customers can bet $5 and get 3 weeks of a free trial of NFL Sunday Ticket from YouTube and YouTube TV. Then with YouTube TV base plan, you'll be able to watch every regular season Sunday afternoon out of market game. All you need is a Google account, current form of payment, then you can cancel anytime. Just visit FanDuel.com/GabeK, that's G-A-B-E-K, again, G-A-B-E-K, to download America's number one sports book. You must be 21 plus and present in Tennessee. Full price of NFL Sunday Ticket will be automatically charged seasonally after the free trial. No refunds, terms, restrictions, and embargoes do apply. And if you have a gambling problem, make sure you reach out to the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Now we need some Week 1 college football advice. We need to talk about the Tigers football program and what they're headed into this weekend at the Liberty Bowl, 6 p.m. against North Alabama. We'll review Florida State and the loss they took. But we have a lot to discuss on the other side with my guy Christian Fowler from Bluff City Media. He's next.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Nothing like a Tuesday when I get to talk to Christian Fowler, senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. We have a podcast called the On the Bluff Podcast, releases every single Tuesday at noon. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, full-length video version on YouTube. Christian, what is happening, brother?
Oh, nothing much, Gabe. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Did you work out in the heat today? Is that what
You are correct.
Yeah. A little much?
yeah, a little.
When I hop into my car and I see 101 on the dash, never great.
Mine said 105 when I just got in it like 30 minutes ago to come home. So yeah, it was.
Well, if you're working outside with your hands, man, you stay in shape. That's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I guess if you want to look at the positives, you get a little bit more tan and you get a little bit of workout all day. But hey, other than that, not too many positives.
So I have to bring this up off the top because this happened about 5 to 10 minutes ago. The Broncos finalized their official 53-man roster, and they got rid of Samaje Perine. I think they ended up cutting Tyler Beatty, who was at the bottom of that running back list. But guess who made the active roster? The active 53-man roster for the Denver Broncos, Blake Watson. We'll get some live reaction to that right here off the top of this segment.
Yeah, I think, honestly, it's going to surprise a lot of people because he was an undrafted free agent. And when undrafted free agents make the roster, that's a big deal, and it's relatively rare. But if you saw what Blake Watson did, not only in his lone season at Memphis, but also Old Dominion, you and I have talked about this a ton over the past several months, really over the past year, since we first started seeing him at Memphis, is that he's tailor-made for today's game.
Yep.
Now, I definitely believe there were better landing spots than Denver, because when you look at the top of that depth chart, you look at Javonte Williams as the starter. What will he be like in year two after the ACL injury? He wasn't great last year, but it was a really gruesome knee injury. Could he, you know, kind of return to his rookie season form? Jaleel McLaughlin is very similar in style to Blake Watson, yep, which is, I think, why I say it's a little bit of a weird fit. And then they drafted Aldrick Estime this year, I think, in the, fifth round? I think they said they had a second or third round grade on him, and they got him in the fifth round, mainly because of his lack of speed. So it's a very cluttered running back room in Denver right now. But for him to make it over Samaje Perine makes sense, younger, more upside. Samaje Perine was a solid pass catcher last year, but that's not really what he's known for or has been known for throughout his career, other than the last 2 years. You know, the 1 year in Cincinnati and then the 1 year in Denver, he became a pass catcher. But yeah, I think Blake Watson is perfectly molded to today's game. He's a multi-threat back that can, you know, run between the tackles, run outside the tackles, catch the ball. He can do everything. And that is what I believe allowed him to make the team. And, you know, we'll see what he does. Like I said, very crowded. If he's going to ever make noise there, it'll probably take an injury or a couple of years for him to continue working up the depth chart. But good on him. Undrafted free agent making a roster is a huge deal.
Yeah, it's the least surprising thing in the world to me, though, and I know you're the same way. But also what I did like to see is, looking at some of the Broncos beat reporters and the people that cover that team, they weren't surprised in this either. I mean, they've seen him through, like, OTAs, mini camp, into training camp, had some decent games in the preseason, even though he's playing in the end of the fourth quarter. He was the last guy to get carries. I don't think there are a lot of people that are surprised by this. I think what was surprising to me more than like him making the roster is the fact that he wasn't a drafted running back. It still blows my mind. There's a guy who ran a 4.3 at his pro day, jumped out of the gym on his broad and his vert to go with the production. I still don't understand how that guy didn't get drafted, but I think he got a really good undrafted free agent deal. He's going to make some good money, and now that he's on the active roster, he gets that weekly check, and we know how that weekly check goes. That's nice for him. Very happy for him. But I have to transition this to your Cowboys real quick while we're on the NFL. CeeDee Lamb gets his deal, 4 years, $136 million, second highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history. I guess I'll just throw it to you. Like, what how do you feel? Is it just like a finally, like a sigh of relief?
Yeah, it's 100% a finally, but it's also, okay, thankfully they got this done and this didn't linger into the season and become an issue. Because if you just can read the writing on the wall, like if the Cowboys did not have CeeDee Lamb in that receiver core, just on that offense as a whole, you're looking at a unit, Brandon Cooks, Jalen Tolbert, Jalen Brooks, Ezekiel Elliott, Rico Dowdle, Deuce Vaughn, Jake Ferguson would be probably at this point in Brandon Cooks' career, Jake Ferguson would probably be relatively easily the best player on the entire offense, and that is not a recipe for success. But so thankfully, they got it done, and we talked about this on the podcast last night, but my biggest takeaway from it is really now you have so much more potential for something going wrong. You know, right. CeeDee Lamb has not been in not had contact.
Soft tissue.
Has not went through padded practices, and that's when you see the groins and the hamstrings and the quads and those kind of injuries. And it's like this could have completely been avoided if this would have been taken care of when it should have. And I used this last night on the podcast as well. I still have not seen if this is confirmed, so this could be wrong. But I did see a report saying that a month ago the offer was sitting at 4 years, $132 million. And if it took them a month, over $4 million, that is one of the crazier things that I've ever heard. And I think the most annoying part about this, and there's a lot of them that I just went through, is Jerry was kind of like thumping his chest after this signing.
Oh, I mean, he dropped a bunch of F-bombs in a story he did with Clarence Hill, who's now, he's no longer the Star Telegram. I think he's with DLLS Sports. It's like a startup.
Yeah.
But he dropped F-bomb after F-bomb, said nobody can do this effing job better than me. It was nuts.
Absolutely insane. No one can do this job better than you, but it took you all of, what are we, we're in August now. This has been going on since, you know, February, March. Took you 6-7 months to sign one of your top three players, and it came 2 weeks before the season starts, and nobody can do this better than you. Pretty egotistical, pretty wild, and like I said, just annoying overall that's the narrative coming out of it, is we signed one of our top three players to a mega deal, and it took this long through all of training camp, and we're thumping our chest.
And he's saying, look what I did. Look at what Jared did. Absolutely. Yeah, like but that's him, man. That's him. He likes being the center of attention. He loves it.
It is. And it's like, this was a difficult decision, signing a top two wide receiver in the entire league. Like, come on. Like, too much. Just annoying. Just saying, same old Jerry Jones, same old Cowboys nonsense.
Man. I'm sorry for you. You were born after all the championships. You've been waiting and waiting and waiting. Golly.
I've never seen one.
Yeah,
the running joke since I think middle school was, it won't happen until I die, but the year I die, it'll happen.
Well, okay, so this is the next question that the Cowboys have to answer. You just signed like one of the best pass catchers in the NFL, and you have a quarterback who could be a free agent after this year if you don't sign him soon. Dak Prescott, I mean, he wants what, 58 to 60 million, probably right around 60 million per year. Is that going to happen?
Yeah.
Is that going to happen?
I would say it absolutely has to. At this point, if you're going to invest that much in a wide receiver, and it's instead of being a 5-year deal, it's a 4-year deal to a player that's 25. So you're getting him through his prime, but we'll see if they re-up or if they extend him after this contract is over. But if you don't re-sign Dak, you're going to waste CeeDee Lamb's contract, because what are your options at this point? Cooper Rush does not have the upside to roll him out there. Let's not even pretend or act like that. So the only on-roster option that makes sense for longevity would be Trey Lance, who just threw 5 interceptions against the Los Angeles Chargers third stringer.
You know what I do love is he threw 5 interceptions, and I saw a lot of praise for him. Like, oh, I see what's so exciting. I see what's so exciting about this guy.
I did, too. I saw so many things that were like, this is why. This game is exactly why so many executives around the league are still excited about Trey Lance's potential. And it's like, I get it. He can run the ball. He's a great running quarterback. He would be a top 5 running quarterback in the league if he was a starter. But he can't throw the ball. And look at Justin Fields. He's competing with the washed-up Russell Wilson right now. Like, let's not act like he is someone who can be transcendent, because I think he's proven at this point that he is what he is. He's a very mediocre at best passer and a really, really good runner, and that's just not going to get you over the hump. So you take off the on-roster options, and you look past that, and you say, well, the Cowboys have a pretty good roster, so they're probably going to win at least 9 or 10 games this year, so there's no way they could get an elite quarterback in this class, and there aren't really any anyway in this class. To me, this isn't a great quarterback class. I'm not sold on really any of them, Carson Beck, Quinn Ewers, Shedeur Sanders. Not really any guys that I would plant my flag on and say this is a 100% of franchise cornerstone. So now you're looking at least 2 years down the road. Roster's probably still too strong. You probably still win 7 to 9 games even without Dak at quarterback. And where does it come from? How are you going to ever get an elite quarterback? You have to make the signing. I know they don't want to pay him $55 to $60 million, but there's no other option. I'm sorry, there's just not.
Yeah, and I'm going to break this down a little bit later, but it is simple economics why these quarterbacks get paid what they are paid. You want a Super Bowl winning quarterback. There's five quarterbacks that are active that have won Super Bowls, and two of them are Joe Flacco and Russell Wilson. There's just they right. don't grow on trees, man. It's supply and demand. It's not that complicated to understand, and Dak Prescott's good enough to warrant that type of money. I know that he has those issues in the playoffs, but in the end of the day, he gets you to the playoffs. And that's you in this league, in the National Football League, all you ask for is to get a chance. Get a damn chance. Get me to the playoffs. We'll see what happens. What can fall in line from there?
Yeah, and you said five quarterbacks, and there's a third one in Aaron Rodgers who's 40-plus years old.
Correct.
And past his prime. So there's not that, like you said, perfectly. They do not grow on trees. You're not just going to go find a Super Bowl winning quarterback, or even quarterbacks that have competed in Super Bowls. You want to go get Jimmy Garoppolo from the Rams, who's on a 6-game suspension for PED. It's like it's unrealistic. Quarterbacks are so hard. It is so difficult to find elite quarterbacks that a lot of times, even the ones that we think are going to be elite. And I've got a couple in my head right now that I'm thinking about with guys like Trevor Lawrence and Justin Herbert. Guys that have been, top draft picks and had solid years throughout their career, they've had almost zero playoff success. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's so difficult. Talent at the quarterback position is only part of being a Super Bowl winning team, unless your name is Patrick Mahomes or Tom Brady. Those are really the only two quarterbacks in NFL history that you can say won Super Bowls without really, really good cores at times. They've had good cores at times, but there have been times where they have led teams to Super Bowls that should not have been Super Bowl contenders. See Patrick Mahomes last year. I mean, it doesn't happen. So when you have an elite level top 10 quarterback, you have to pay them because it's not going to come around again for quite some time.
Yeah, and talking with Christian Fowler at C Fowler BCM, senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. I want to catch up because we got to catch up with our old friend Mike Norvell on Saturday with Week 0. They played Georgia Tech in Ireland, and they're the number 10 team in the country, and they lost by a game-expiring field goal from Georgia Tech 24-21. What the hell was that? Like, what? Seriously, what was that?
I think a lot of this, and you brought this point up last night when we were talking, and this is such a great point that I really haven't seen many other people make. Many people have just kind of been caught in the shock of the number 10 team in the country losing to Georgia Tech. But if we honestly looked at Florida State's roster and stacked it up against the other top 25 teams, they are not a top 10 team in the country. I don't see any way you can make an argument for them to be. Were they incredible last year?
Yes.
When Jordan Travis was playing? Yes, absolutely. Outside of the bowl game, they won every single game that they played. They were a very, very good team. But look at what they lost in the draft this year. They lost Jordan Travis, who was their quarterback, their point guard. I mean, he did everything. He was an incredible fit in Mike Norvell's system. Trey Benson, who was a second-round pick of the Arizona Cardinals. Keon Coleman, who was the first pick of the second round to the Buffalo Bills. Johnny Wilson, who was drafted to the Eagles. Jaheim Bell, the tight end, who I think was drafted maybe in the 7th round. And then on the defensive side of the ball, you had a first-round pick and a second-round pick, I believe, in Jared Verse and Braden Fiske, both by the Los Angeles Rams. This team was gutted. Like, their best players are all gone from that team that went undefeated through the regular season. They're all gone. And they didn't do much – impressive to replace them. I mean, replacing Jordan Travis with DJU is not a lateral or upward move. It's a downward move. So they downgraded at the quarterback position. They downgraded at pretty much all those positions I just listed.
Yep.
And so for them to be a preseason top 10 team, I think like you said it last night, it was to try to make up a little bit for the disrespect that they felt towards the end of last season when they were not a college football playoff team. And they were just overrated. I mean, this team was a giant question mark coming into this game.
Yeah.
And this is not to say that they can improve throughout the year.
Sure.
Because they absolutely can. They still have talent on the team. They still have a great coach in Mike Norvell, a great offensive mind, who, if anybody can fix the issues that they had, it's him. But they're much weaker on the offensive line. They're much weaker on the defensive line. They're much weaker at receiver, running back, quarterback. They're weaker in pretty much every area. And that showed. So when you peel back the layers, I don't think it's as surprising as on face value if you say the number 10 team in the country lost to Georgia Tech in week zero. It's really not that crazy.
Yeah, and here's the other thing, and I know you sort of covered it. It's like it is a little bit of a lesson in trying to completely reload through the portal. You're not going to always move up. You're not going to find lateral moves and upward moves on the portal or in the portal. But I think bigger than that, it's like Mike is used to explosion on the offensive end, in the running game, in the passing game. And where are, like truthfully, where are the Daryl Henderson, Tony Pollard, Antonio Gibson types? Where are the Anthony Millers? Where are the Calvin Austin the Thirds? Where are the DeMonte Coxies? Where are the Keon Colemans, the Johnny Will? Where are they? He did not find any of those guys. I didn't see anybody out there on the offensive side of the ball outside of maybe a couple of the running backs. I think Lawrence Toa-Feely's got a little juice. Jalen Lucas, number 13, had a little juice on that first drive. Outside of those two guys, I just don't see guys that are explosive enough and can create explosive plays in the pass game and the run game. And it's just that, to me, is going to be their biggest downfall this year. He has to find some guys that he can exploit, put out there, put in good positions to make big plays.
Yeah, and I mean, they did a good job in the portal for, like, if you look at it, okay, Malik Benson, they got out of Alabama. He was a four-star transfer. Jaylen Brown, the wide receiver, they got out of LSU. He was a four-star transfer. But all the stock being put into transfers is so difficult, especially guys that play sparingly and their transfer rankings are primarily based on their high school rankings.
Yeah.
I think
and projection. It's all projection.
Projection, yeah. And that's something that we're seeing more and more with the portal when we see these freshmen or redshirt freshmen who have not played enter the portal and say, okay, well, they were a borderline five-star player coming out of high school. They've only been there for a year or two, and we haven't seen much from them. So we're going to have to put them around that same mark, and they're coming from Alabama, LSU, like top programs in the country. It just doesn't tell the whole story. And once again, those are younger players in Jaylen Brown and Malik Benson, and we'll see. Like it could come throughout the year. They might turn the corner. DJU might figure something out. Like we can say all these caveats to it. But if you don't have proven guys that you know right off the bat, like, okay, we've seen this guy in practice, we've seen this guy play, like, he's got exactly what we need. It's like, no, we're banking on high school talent from these players, what they showed in high school, and not what they are at the college level. So we'll see how it turns out. But as of right now, it's not looking very good for Florida State.
How much did it change seeing them lose that game? How much did it change your opinion on what we'll see week three? Top team that was picked to win the ACC, Florida State, team that was picked to win the AAC in Memphis. Like, how much did it change your opinion on that game, of course, at Florida State?
I think it gave me more confidence that it's a game that Memphis could potentially win. Because if Florida State was going to be as dominant on the offensive line and defensive line as a lot of pundits said that they would be, then it would be a really tall task for Memphis to go win that game just based off of the sheer size of Florida State. It would be a tough matchup. But to see the way that they were dominated up front by Georgia Tech's offensive line and defensive line, it's like, okay, Memphis definitely has a shot in this game. Now, does it also change things that now Florida State is going to be playing with a sense of urgency? Yeah, I think that's a big point to this.
Sure.
That a lot of people probably will overlook. because their margin for error just shrunk significantly after week zero. And they know that. Mike Norvell knows that. The team knows that. We don't have much wiggle room anymore. It has to be our best performance pretty much every week to get back into that level of a top 10, top 12 team to compete for both the ACC and for, you know, a college football playoff spot that they were not awarded last year. So there are multiple layers to it. I feel more confident because I feel like Memphis can play with them in the trenches, but also it gives me a little bit of pause to say how much motivation do they have
right
going into that game? Do they, you know, okay, at a conference game, about to get into the conference schedule, this is not a game that we can overlook. That kind of makes me err on the other side because it was in a perfect spot where you say, okay, Florida State's going to start off the year hot. Right before they go into conference play, like there or to the meat of their conference schedule, this could be one of those, you know, classic, they overlook Memphis and Memphis comes in there ready to play. And now maybe not so much because it's Boston College and then Memphis. And I just don't, and then after Memphis, it's Cal and SMU. So
right.
I don't see them overlooking Memphis anymore. I don't see them looking past Memphis anymore. And so I think that aspect makes it difficult. But just based off of talent, this is a game that Memphis can 100% go in and win.
Yeah, speaking of talent, Memphis football put out their game week depth chart for North Alabama. Of course, it'll be at 6 p.m. on Saturday in Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. But what are your main takeaways, thoughts from the first depth chart that was released?
I think the biggest thing, and this is overwhelmingly positive, Memphis brought in a ton of transfers. From primarily smaller schools, really outside of Elijah Herring, who came from Tennessee. And I think we counted last night 10 or 11 transfers from this year are starting.
Yep.
And that is a big win because when you bring in these guys that you handpick to come to your school and compete for starting spots, and they win those starting spots over, you know, guys that have been there, guys that know the system, guys that have pedigree, that's a great sign. Like, just looking at the offensive line alone, Chris Adams winning at the left tackle spot coming in from Old Dominion, and Trent Holler getting the center job coming out of Marshall. Kedro Lewis out of UL Monroe winning the right tackle job. You have three transfers that have played, you told me, a combined, what, 99 games?
The starting five have played 99 games at the FBS level, started 99 games at the FBS level.
Yes, so you have a ton of experience there, and a lot of guys at this staff went and handpicked to hopefully, fingers crossed, be starters, and now they are. Defense as well. Secondary, you got a couple transfers there. Defensive line, you've got two transfers that are starting out of your three defensive linemen, and P.J. Lucas, who came over from Indiana, and Javon Dennis from Georgia State. Linebacker room, you've got two transfer starters there. Elijah Herring, who I just talked about from Tennessee, and Matt Hudson, who came over from Harvard. Like, they clearly did a very good job of the transfers that they brought in because the majority of them won starting spots. And to me, that is a huge positive. If we were to look at this first official depth chart and seen two of these transfers starting and then a lot of guys that maybe were redshirt sophomores or redshirt juniors that had been on campus that had beat them out, I would have felt negatively about it. I would have been like, oh, my gosh, they brought in all these guys to compete, and they all lost. But the majority of them won, and to me, that's a great sign.
Yeah, now, stylistically, another thing that jumped out at me about this depth chart, looks like you're going to have three down linemen, three linebackers, five defensive backs. Looks like they're going to go 3-3-5 this year. It's sort of their base. Obviously, I think Jordan Hankins has shown the ability, did in the Liberty Bowl, to be more multiple. But it looks like they're going to this 3-3-5 look that we really haven't seen a defense coordinator try here since Memphis has been on the up and up since about 2014.
Yeah, and we'll see how it's executed and we'll see how it's switched up because we had a great conversation about our preferences on defenses last night. How many down linemen do you like to have on the field? How many backers do you like to have on the field? But the big thing and the reason I think this is their base defense is their personnel. This is what they want, three linebackers on the field. And when it's Elijah Herring, Chandler Martin, and Matt Hudson, I don't
feel pretty good about
it. Mad at that at all. And you've got Carmelo Overton, who was the highest rated recruit in the 22 or 23 class, backing up Chandler Martin, and Jaden Flaker, who's another transfer from NC Central, backing up Matt Hudson. and you just go, man, the depth here is really, really good, and they can rotate and feel good about, you know, five or six guys in this linebacker room. So the 3-3-5 will be the base, it appears, but defenses aren't like that anymore. And we kind of talked about when we were in high school and playing football, your base defense was your defense.
Yes.
There was no deviation from that. If you ran, the school I went to, we ran a 3-3 in high school, and it was never, there were never going to be four down linemen out there. There were never going to be two backers out there. Like, it was always 3-3.
Yeah.
And now that's not the case. Like, defenses are multiple now. You know, 3-3-5 might be the base, but in this situation, you'll have four down linemen and two linebackers, or four down linemen and three backers, or you have your nickel package and your dime package. There's so many different defenses that are run. I don't think this is as big of a deal as it used to be, and especially with Jordan Hankins being a younger coach. If this was an old school coach, you'd be like, okay, maybe this is primarily what they're running. But with him being a younger, newer defensive coordinator, I think we see a lot of different looks, a lot of things switched up. So I'm not concerned about it at all. I don't think it's weird at all, because it will be whatever it needs to be based on, you know, down and distance or specific team personnel, whatever the case is for that specific week or that specific down and distance, whatever the case may be. It'll change based off of that.
Yeah, and I think really what it comes down to with these three down linemen, three linebackers, you're going to blitz a lot more with your linebackers because you have really talented blitzing linebackers. And then up front, like, just sort of viewing it on the surface, I think Reggie Grimes, who they brought over from Oklahoma, who was supposed to be somewhat of a pass rusher, he's going to be hurt for the first couple of weeks. We'll see when he can return. But I don't know if they have a bunch of pass rush up front. That's why you do this. That's why you go about it, and your base plan is to have three down linemen and play all these linebackers at once. You just don't have enough as far as D linemen to get after the quarterback the way you want to with four down linemen.
Yeah, and I think there is at least a small bit of concern for Memphis's depth on the defensive line. I
sure.
Like what they have starting. You know, PJ Lucas, a big space eater for him, perfect nose tackle for a three down front at 6'2", 320 is what he's listed at. Javon Dennis, who came in from Georgia State and won a job, and William Whitlow, who surprisingly won a job after having a strong redshirt sophomore season at the other defensive end. But past them, you know, you look at the defensive end spots, Darius Jones, Cormonte Hamilton, you got some good depth there. The other defensive end spot behind Javon Dennis, it's not very deep. Behind P.J. Lucas, you're not very deep. So, to me, we'll see how it plays out, and a lot of it depends on health, because if you have someone go down, I think the concern level obviously goes up. But I like that. I like what they have on the front line as the starters. But now that I look at this depth chart and see the names on it, and a lot of them just being guys that we haven't seen before, is the biggest reason. I do have more concern about the defensive line, I think, than any other position group on the team. But they could absolutely prove me wrong, and those guys could be incredible in this three down front. But we will see.
Yeah. Last thing, you don't expect to see much out of this North Alabama game coming on Saturday.
I don't think we'll
get the best look for what this defense, what this team will look like.
No, I don't think we learn much from this game. Unfortunately, it starts the season off on a good note. But as far as learning anything or being able to have massive season long takeaways from this game,
yeah,
I don't think we see that. I think maybe our only takeaway is if Mario Anderson runs all over them like he should, we say, oh my gosh, Mario Anderson's in for an even bigger season than we were expecting, because wow, he looks incredible.
Well, but him and Sutton listed as slashers there at the running back position. They don't have like a starting running back, but it's going to be all game plan based.
Correct. And I saw a lot of people talking about that, like, oh my gosh, we had all these expectations for Mario Anderson, and he's not even listed as the true starter over Sutton Smith. And I think it's multifaceted. I think first off, you have two completely different styles. Sutton Smith is a great receiving running back. Mario Anderson's more of your between the tackles guy. So they're two totally different styles. We've been referring to kind of the thunder and lightning all offseason,
sure,
and that's really what they are. And then also, Sutton has proved himself to be a very good running back. And like I said, receiving, he can be lined up in the slot. He can be moved around. These two players are guys that can be on the field at the same time. And I think that's very smart for for the coaching staff to do. So I wasn't really surprised by that because they're such different players. They both will play a lot this year, and they'll both make big impacts this year.
Yep, for sure. Well, Christian, I appreciate it, man. We'll do it again next Tuesday.
Yes, sir. See y'all next week.
Yes, sir. That's Christian Fowler at CFowlerBCM, senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. We have podcasts on the Bluff Podcast, Apple, Spotify, full-length video version on YouTube, releases every single Tuesday at noon before he does his spot right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show. Now, we need to go ahead and get to hour number two, and starting that off is going to be none other than Jeff Calkins. We'll talk to him about the Memphis Sports Hall of Fame induction that he will be emceeing, how he voted, how all this went down. And then we'll get to some other things. We'll get to some other things on the other side with Jeff right here on 92.9 FM ESPN.